I interviewed Al Saihan. He told me he went in to play short after it happened. How did it happen?
Well, I was making a double play when Dolph Camilli slid into me and broke my ankle. And then I played the rest of the inning on the broken ankle. And then Sihaki came in and relieved me. You've done a little research on this, going back to 42 and 45. You did a little reading.
That's right.
And that's something. Because you don't go back as far as I do
in
baseball.
February 1945.
I was going to say, this is beautiful as far as I'm concerned in bringing back these highlights, because memories right now in my career of baseball is great when I can sit down and go over these things, but usually it's brought up by myself.
Sure, right. In 1944, you won the batting title, of course, with 327 in the reach, and if I'm not mistaken, Mel Harder won his 200th big league game that year.
That's true. I beat out Bob Johnson of the Philadelphia A's that year by, I think, 1 point. It was very close, yes. Went down to the last day.
I know that Bobby Doerr was doing well, too.
Yes, Bobby Doerr.
So.
Right, Bobby Doerr would have led the league. There's no doubt in my mind. Mm-hmm. Great gentleman, a great hitter. But then he was called into service, and he lacked the number of times at bat or the number of games to be eligible.
I see. Can you assess the impact that the return of Feller in late 1945 had on the team? Like, did most of the players welcome him back, or did they view him as a threat to their own jobs?
No, all of them welcomed him back. And not only his teammates, but I think everybody in the American League was happy to see Bob come back. The same as we were happy to see Ted Williams come back after his stint in the service. This is great for the individuals as well as for the game of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It just stimulated everybody, and it also, I think, stimulated those who were serving their country to be able to leave the service and come back to their own jobs, and they
sure.
knew that they were welcome.
Sure. I understand that there was a tremendous crowd in Cleveland when he pitched his first game. I guess it was against Detroit.
It was a sellout, yes. It was great. It brought tears to my eyes to see the great welcome that he received, and he was very, very happy with it.
Mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years ago, that was Graham's first name.
Who?
Graham. Graham. Well, anyway, the son of a sports writer named Graham wrote an article in Sports Illustrated called "When Baseball Went to War," and in that he mentioned that Alva Bradley, the owner of the Indians, was one of those owners who really didn't want the game to go on if it was going to be 10 minutes lost. For instance, Ed Barrow, the Yankees, said he'd continue even if he could only have a 16-man team. Bradley was one of the ones that wasn't too hot for that.
Well, Mr. Bradley thought that baseball was tops in entertainment for a lot of people, and he felt that the entertainment of watching minor leaguers or semi-pro fellas performing and charging major league prices just couldn't be done. Now, the late Judge Landis, Commissioner Landis, also felt this way, that this baseball was entertainment, not only for the public, but also for our servicemen. And this is where he started exhibition games in service camps all over the country. Anytime we had an off day, that we could reach a service camp and perform in front of our men who are serving their country, we would do it. And this was Judge Landis's theory, that these fellows that are serving our country deserve the best, and if they wanted to see Major League Baseball and be able to meet Major League Baseball players, they could do it if we would go to them in their camps and perform. And this is one of the reasons why we did that and continued baseball, of course. But Mr. Bradley, the same as several other owners, just was afraid that baseball would deteriorate to a point where it was not being useful to the country in a form of entertainment.
Now, was Bradley an independently wealthy man? Judging from the salaries I've heard that paid Indian ballplayers, I'd say no. Like Al Saihan, he said he made only $400 a month for 5 or 6 months worth of ball. That's a pretty low salary.
Well, don't forget, we were in different times at that time. For an example, I'll tell you, we would thrive on 800,000 attendance. From there on, we would make money. And it's much different now. You have to draw over $1 million. And some folks that own ball clubs with the exorbitant salary now have to draw $1.5 million before they start making money. So you have a difference in time, different in value of the money, different in construction of baseball insofar as minor leaguers that are available and ready to step in at your job. So you would sign a major league contract at the minimum. And we at that time, there was no player association. In 1947, I was one of many 400 or so baseball players that voted for and started the baseball pension, but that didn't start till 1947.
But was Bradley an independently wealthy?
This I can't answer. I didn't. I can't answer that because I don't know the true facts. I did know him and met him, and he was president of the Cleveland Baseball Club. But I can't answer about his financial background.
Are there any specific members of the board members that you'd like to comment on?
Well, I could comment on most all of them in that respect, because that was a nucleus of building into a 1948 World's Championship team. Most of those fellas were there, experienced, and came back. Of course, you know the story about Feller leaving and coming back, and the caliber of baseball was not such as it is at the present time or before the war, but nevertheless, that baseball was just part of the country that would go along with the war effort.
What kind of a fellow was Ringwald?
He was a very fine gentleman, a college graduate of Case University. We joined the Cleveland organization in 39 and was farmed out to Buffalo. And we worked together, we roomed together, and he was a great gentleman and a great ball player, and one who had desire, aggressiveness. He was a clean liver on and off the field. If my son could use him as an ideal, I would be very proud.
How about Kenny Keltner?
I'm just
saying Keltner had good hands.
Keltner was great. Yeah, I think he's the greatest that I've seen. And I've seen a lot of great fielding third basemen. But he was the greatest in going over behind third base and backhanding hard ground balls or short hop line drives that would go into his glove. And he had a good arm. He could move to the left very well, but his main patented play was the ball hit over third base very sharply, and that's where he stopped Joe DiMaggio in that hitting streak by robbing him twice of doubles, at least doubles down that left field line with backhanded stabs. And Keltner had a hitch. He was one of the ball players that I never changed insofar as hitting, or my batting instructor never changed. He had a great hitch in the swing, but he was so strong and quick enough that he could bring the bat around and hit the long ball. And he was a very tough player and a good hustler. Good hustler. He'd give you nine innings or more of good hard work. Okay.
Thank you. Hope that helps. Thank you.